Can you believe it, people? Look at that intro. Look at that new intro. I said intro. Nothing to do with me, people. That is all down to Peter Etherington. You want stuff like that done, you got to hit up that guy below. He's the one to do all of that stuff. Welcome to From Bromley With Love. I just realized if you listen to this on the audio, you don't even know what I'm talking about because you can't visually see it. But it was really good, people. So, for those watching on the visuals, I'm Ashley St. Patrick here, one third of the deep dive. And welcome back to another episode, another edition of the Deep Dive. As ever, I'm joined by Colin Head and Peter Etherington. With Bromley still thinking back to when these deep dives started this season, I feel like I'm a boxing announcer, and still top of League Two with 9 games to go. Our Bromley Football Club on 73 points, with albeit MK Dons and Cambridge breathing down our necks. If, for those of you who are on Championship Watch or Champions Watch, you're aware of the fact that MK Dons and Cambridge are breathing down our necks and looking quite ominous. But if you're on Automatic Promotion Watch, then Bromley have a 9-point buffer from Notts County in fourth. I think Salford might have leapfrogged Swindon, actually. So from Notts County in fourth, albeit Notts County have a game in hand. Gentlemen, how are you, first and foremost?
Yeah, good, thank you. Yeah,
fine.
Great stuff. I'm going to get straight into something here, which is going to sound quite controversial, but I only saw it earlier today. And it caught me by surprise. So I can't remember his name, and I don't know why it came on my Twitter algorithm. Damn you, algorithm. But it was the manager of Vauxhall Motors. I don't know what league. Vauxhall Motors, for those of you who are old enough, there's a football conference shout from the past. But I don't know what league they're in now, probably Unibond Premier or something. I don't know. He had quote tweeted the Project 73 video that Bromley put out at the time of recording last night. And obviously he's the manager, and I'm paraphrasing, but his basic comment was something along the lines of, if I'm as a manager, I would never do something like this. You've got to keep that in-house. It makes Bromley look foolish and could backfire spectacularly. Now, it caught me off guard. But after I paused and thought about it, I looked at it in two ways. Way one, I get it as another gaffer. If you look at that and go, I don't know, you know, like everyone's on their kind of hate watch thing these days. Like, I get it how you're looking at it and you want to be online and you want to have a profile and you want to let people know what you think. So I get it. I get that you've got to have your say. On the other hand, I look at it and I think, is he like looking at it too deeply? Like, is it that deep? Because at the end of the day, Bromley, let's not try and get this twisted. Bromley aren't supposed to be where they're supposed to be. If teams were doing what they were supposed to do, Bromley aren't supposed to be leading League Two with 9 games to go, right? And Andy made it quite clear to me before the season started that he was targeting the playoffs. And that, at the time, for all Bromley fans, was seen as almost like the peak of what we could possibly achieve in this league, right? Is there anything wrong with the club tweeting out the video? Because they've done it before, albeit at the end of a season. But is there anything wrong with the club tweeting out, with 9 games to go, we've achieved our first target with 9 games to go? Is that an own goal? Do you see anything wrong with it? Let's start there, Colin.
No, I don't, because we've achieved the goal. If you put it out beforehand, yeah, that looks foolish. If you put it out afterwards, when you have achieved what the principal aim of the season was already, with 9 games to go, I think you've got every right to put it out. And I think, you know, from what I haven't seen all of it yet, because I've only just got home today, but from what I've seen of it, I think it's great. I don't have a problem with it. It was like when they put the trophy video out, they put his speech out afterwards when we'd won the trophy, and it was really interesting to see. I really don't have a problem with it.
Pete, any psychological issues you see with putting that video out?
I don't know how much stock the players put in the stuff that goes out on social media. it might not even register on their radar. For the outside world looking in, I mean, Andy Woodman's been very open with you, saying there's a target in-house. Mm. And obviously they've hit that target, and now he's, you know, they've been willing to go on record and express that. But he's also been very open with you, saying, you know, the new target is Project Champions.
Mm.
So in a target-based environment, I think sometimes you can get a little bit down the tunnel of just thinking that's your world, so it's everyone's world. But people on the outside looking in, sometimes that's a bit jarring. It's like when Bromley Football Club, the guys up in the marketing department had a bell on the wall they were ringing every time they got a new sponsor in. To them, in their world, that makes sense. You know, it's a target-based industry. But people on the outside looking in, that's a bit cringe. So you've got to – there's a happy medium. But from the first thing I thought when I saw it is what great PR is it is for Andy Woodman. Because here he is, Mr. Targets. This is what he, you know, brings to your football club. So it felt like, not deliberately, but it felt like a great piece of PR for him. You know, on as he steps into the future, hopefully with Bromley, you know, this is what he brings to a football club. This is his mantra. This is what he sets out at the start of the season. Do you want that in your football club?
Mm.
And a lot of
I'm going to read the exact tweet. I just found it. So it's Danny Holmes, and I'm not trying to dig Danny Holmes out. It's only because it caught my eye on the algorithm. So Danny Holmes, manager of Vauxhall Motors, says, "This is absolutely brilliant, but something I feel that should stay in-house. In a world where we feel we've got to share everything, especially in football, I do disagree with this. Maybe at the end of the season, if successful, share it then. He seems a great manager, though." Does that change your mind based on now I've actually read the exact wording of what he says?
Yeah, it's just his opinion. That's fine. You're allowed to share your opinions. I don't have a problem with it, but that's also fine. If he feels that he wouldn't do that, you know, it's no big thing, is it, really? It's fine.
If you're the opposition, though, and you see that Project 73 video, are you looking at Bromley thinking that gives us a team talk? Are you thinking, look at these Bertie big balls thinking they've achieved something?
I don't know. Given the amount of every club is out on socials doing, I mean, look at, you know, Salford basically lived their entire life on YouTube. You know, you can know everything that's going on there. So you can take it one of two ways. It doesn't bother me, but if people want to find a reason to have a problem with Bromley, I don't care.
No. It's, perhaps more the point is, you know, they have achieved something. It's a big
exactly.
Because it pretty much guarantees them playoffs. That's why they set that target. So, all right, we can argue the merits of Bromley ending up in the playoffs. That I think, you know, we would have our worst fears shoved in our faces at that point, potentially. But at this point in time, I think they're on such a good platform to keep pressing on.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? You know, why not? And the guy from Vauxhall Motors, absolutely entitled to his opinion. And, you know, but he's just doing the same that Bromley are in a way, you know, going out there and putting himself out there, expressing himself, saying, this is what I feel about it. This is what Bromley are saying. This is what we feel about this. What an achievement. We want to share this with our fans.
Mm.
I think you can see it both ways.
If I'm honest, right, at the start of the season, I thought we'd finish mid-table. So the fact that we've got 73 points with 9 games to go, you know, that's incredible. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah. So the last time we all convened, and once again, everyone, I'm sure some of you are listening going, Mash, you promised us that this would be regular. I'm nothing if not a liar. But the last time we convened, Bromley were on the back of 3 straight draws, and people were starting to, squeaky bum time was starting to be the mantra. Andy alluded to it yesterday in the post-match where he was saying he can sense this. He didn't mean internally. I think some people may have interpreted his words internally. He didn't mean that at all. He was saying that he could sense there was some nervousness off the pitch. I think alluding to the fan base. I think that noise has kind of seeped through a bit, that people are panicking, thinking, oh my God, the wheels are coming off, etc. So we've drawn 3 in a row, 1-1 at home to Notts County, 1-1 at home to Cheltenham, and 0-0 away at Harrogate. And I remember, Cole, because in the last episode, you said if we go on to win against Accrington, I think you said we have to win against Accrington, but if we go on to win against Accrington, it doesn't really matter about those draws. Now, the four games since then read Bromley 2, Accrington 1, Bromley 0, Oldham 0, Oldham 1 again. So I think Oldham have actually won five of their last six with that the non win being the draw with Bromley. So 0-0 with Oldham, 1-1 away at Grimsby, and 1-0 at home versus Bristol Rovers. So there's two ways of looking at this. Either you look at the last seven games and you see two wins and four draws, and you see that as problematic, or you're looking at the last four games and you're seeing 8 points from 12, and you're saying keep doing that over the rest of the season and you're going to be all right. So now with the hindsight of 8 from 12 following those three draws, which I guess means, what's that, doing my quick maths, 11 from 21. How many games you got left? 27. So let's say they take half. So they took basically half or just over half from the last seven. If from the next 9, 27, they take 14 points, we would end with, again, just repeating the pattern of the last seven. It would take 14 points for the main in 27. We would end with 87 points. I find it very hard to believe we won't end in automatic promotion if we repeat what we've done in the last seven games. I'll start with you first, Pete. Is that a fair way of looking at things?
Yeah, I mean, since we last spoke, let's take those four games as a microcosm. In those four games, Bromley scored four goals and conceded two and earned 8 points, which is... It's kind of like Bromley's season, or at least the run they're on. That's kind of been their run. It's been lots of tight games, either drawn or won. The only team they've really blown away was Gillingham. That's the pattern of Bromley's season. It is almost like the pattern of the last four games. It's just narrow wins or draw stalemates. And it's four goals in four games, you know, goal a game ratio. The way Bromley play to not lose and not concede, a goal a game ratio will get you, quite a long way down the line if you tally it up over a season. So if they can keep that going, that ratio, I think they'll get over the line. They'll get their wins they need to get that automatic spot. Champions, maybe not with MK Dons now on their run, but who's to say, when Andy Woodman's side's up against the wall, it's when they tend to find ways to grind it out even more so. So it's been an interesting four games.
Before you come in, Cole, I want to read this tweet from Jim Kavanagh, who follows me on Twitter. He's a Barnet fan. He writes some good stuff on Barnet. Always good to get his take on stuff. And he said, he tweeted me at some point in the match against Rovers. And he's, what was it? I think it was, he tweeted me at half time. So I'd done like my half time update and basically said that Bromley had shaded the half and just looked a bit more clinical in the final third than Rovers. And his response to that was, as a Barnet fan, isn't that the story of Bromley's season? You take your chances and others fail to. You're like a well-oiled points-collecting machine. And reflecting on that in hindsight, the reason I've referred to it is because what Pete was just saying there, I think it fits Pete's point there that this is by design. Bromley are just... Like, even when we were going on those runs of drawing matches, I think it was worth pointing out that we did at the time, but we're not losing, right? Like, they find means and ways whereby even if they're not going to win, they're certainly not going to lose, right? And then because they're a team that has this season often been on the right side of tight encounters, it matters. Like, bro, Rovers weren't bad yesterday. I thought they were actually all right. But there was a difference where when they got into the final third, I never thought, you've got someone who's going to do something, if you see what I mean. Whereas with us, you kind of felt, as long as we take one of these, I back us to see it out. Do you see what I mean? So what's your take on it all, Cole?
Yeah, I think I completely agree. I think yesterday, as soon as we scored, I thought, well, we're not going to lose now.
Genuinely. Yes. Yeah.
If we take the lead now, because we defend so well and we concede so few goals, if we score, you're like, we're not going to lose. It was the same at Grimsby. Even if Grimsby equalised 30 seconds later, as soon as we went up, I thought, you know what, we're going to get at least a point now. Because we are very solid at the back. I mean, yesterday, we defended so well in the second half because they did have a lot of the ball, right? He made very attacking substitutions, and fair play to Steve Evans. He had a go. You know, they had a go yesterday. They put three attackers on for the second half. But we defended. I mean, at times, we were defending like an ice hockey team. We just threw every player threw themselves in front of the ball. It's not an easy watch. Of course, there's some anxiety amongst fans because I think we all realise how close we actually are now. But yeah, exactly. I genuinely, we are very, very hard to beat.
Yes.
And, you know, if we go from now to the end of the season and we lose one game, we're definitely going to go up. You know?
I mean, let me look at my fixtures. So upcoming, Bromley have got, obviously, at the time of recording, we've got Newport on Tuesday, Colchester at home on next Saturday, Barrow away following the Saturday after that, Barnet away in the kind of east or either side of the bank holiday, and then Shrewsbury at home. I actually think, I'm going to be honest, because I think I've stuck to this, I'm going to maintain it. I actually think a lot of the drama of the end of this season could be sorted out before we even get to the final big four games. Yeah. If Bromley continue just doing so, what, there's 15 points up for grabs, Newport, Colchester, Barrow, Barnet, Shrewsbury, right? Bromley's aim should be to collect as many as possible before those back-to-back games against MK Dons and Cambridge United, never mind Salford and Walsall, right? Because I think I said it to Pete yesterday, that what people have to keep remembering, and I keep saying this and I'll keep writing about it, I'll keep saying it in post-match verdicts and stuff, particular, let's now include Salford. Notts County, Salford and Swindon have to win. Draws are no longer enough for them. They're in a position already this season or in the back end of the season where every game they're realizing or thinking, we actually have to win, you know, because there's Bromley are 19 unbeaten. MK Dons have now found form. Cambridge have lost 1 in 22. They're like, everyone's just forgotten that as well, right? The top three basically don't look like they're going to lose anytime soon. So the other three have to win to gain ground. And when you go into games knowing you have to win, there's actually loads of pressure on you to keep that up. Game after game after game. And that doesn't mean that MK Dons, Cambridge and Bromley can afford to lose, but it does mean that they're going into the games with less pressure than the other three. Or is that too simplistic, Pete?
I mean, ideal world, it's exactly what you're saying. You take from the next sort of five games that are on paper easier, you want to take as many points as possible. Ideal world, five from five, and you just, you know, then you don't have to sweat it, but it's not that easy, of course. But just rack up as many points as you can so that those that final run in is, you know, the pressure it diminishes. If there's a spanner thrown in the works in these next games, it's going to be about how Bromley recover from that. Because that's going to be a big jolt to the system. If something happens that, you know, that a loss and somewhere in these games that they will definitely be ring marking as ones to win, if something happens and something goes wrong, it's not going to be so much that game in particular. It's going to be how they react to that. So, yeah, it's just take as many as possible. No prisoners.
Cole, do you think there's any coincidence in, so again, last time we spoke, quite a lot of conversation both on this show and around the fan base about rotation and tired legs, tired minds. Now, interestingly to me, the two games we've won since that three draws on the spin were Accrington at home and Bristol Rovers at home. But what's interesting for me about both those games is we didn't have a Tuesday night game before those two games. We had a full week to go into Accrington. Yes, they went down to 10, but we had a full week to go into Accrington. We had a full week to go into Bristol Rovers. And what was notable to me, particularly at home against Bristol Rovers, is how fresh we started and how quick we started. And it was the first time in a long time I was like, oh, that energy's back. Yeah. Do you see what I mean? And I just wonder if a lot of this has been... Now, obviously, we now play Tuesday night against Newport, but I think it's a full League Two schedule on Tuesday. I just wonder how much of this was having to just actually rest minds as much as legs, because it was just the relentless Saturday, Tuesday, but also with everybody whilst doing it with a target on your back. And I just wonder if it was as simple as he's had a chance to actually get back to the training ground and just have a full week's prep. What do you think about that, Cole?
Yeah, I agree. Because I think we said ahead of the Accrington game, I hope he sends them home for a couple of days and tells them not to think about football. I remember I was saying that. And I think that was important. And I was thinking about this afternoon. It's noticeable that when we've had a week with no midweek game, the Saturday, I think we really perform well. I don't think that's a coincidence. He has time to work some stuff out in the training ground. The players have a bit of time to rest. I thought yesterday we looked fresher and less tired and more rejuvenated. And I was really encouraged by the performance in general, because we had to work really hard for that in the second half. But we did, and we kept going right to the end. You know, we were out on our feet at the end, but we kept going for like 90 plus minutes. And yeah, I think it does help when you've got a clear week to prepare and maybe rest up a little bit. Definitely, it's a long season, you know, and we play 46 league games. It's a huge season. You're going to need times where you just sort of have to reset a little bit.
Pete, he didn't introduce subs yesterday. Didn't introduce subs yesterday until the 78th minute, something like that. And I found that quite interesting because Shaq Ford hadn't been sent off yet. He was sent off about 3 minutes after the subs. Damola Ajayi running at him and getting that second yellow for Shaq Ford. What did you make of that? Because I wrote down in my notes that I thought it should have been done earlier. Not because I thought people were flagging, but just Rovers had the majority of the ball in the second half. So I was just looking at the bench going, yeah, we need to... Kabamba was looking a bit isolated up top. Because he was up against three centre... Well, actually, it was four in the second half. But he was looking a bit isolated. The balls weren't really dropping off to anyone. And eventually did it in the 78th minute. And ultimately, we saw out the game with relatively minimum fuss for the remaining 12. Would you have done it earlier? Is that hindsight? Or do you think you played it correctly?
In the North Terrace, the fans were getting on his back about it. Not that that will faze Andy Woodman, but they were getting anxious because probably were pumping the ball up to Kabamba and there was a limit to what he could do in terms of holding the ball up because there was no one near him.
Yeah.
So the ball was just coming straight back at Bromley every time. And the changes he made, late as they were, it almost was suddenly got like going from a deep 4-4-1-1 to going sort of 4-3-3, almost. Mm-hmm. Not exactly, but suddenly you just had so much more attacking impetus that gave Rovers much more to think about. And it also gave Bromley a chance to get on the ball higher up the field. I would have been tempted to make that change earlier because it was clear that nothing was sticking up the top. When Bromley were playing it up, it was just coming straight back at them. They were putting themselves under pressure. And also, you've got to think about Tuesday night as well. Mm-hmm. Honda Mark played a full 90 on yesterday, and it was a full 90. You know, he was box to box, doing it all. But as Andy said to you at full time, he's put Will Hondemark and Ben Thompson in there because they have more of a goal threat. And Bromley are going to need that. You know, they're down a striker and they are going to need those guys getting in around it. And with all due respect to Jude Arthurs, fantastic player, love him to bits, but that's not necessarily his strong point. He'll get you a goal every now and again, but he's not as actively goal-minded as those two. So it'd be interesting to see what Andy Woodward does on Tuesday against Newport, whether he gives Will Hondemark a rest, at least to start with, and then brings him on, depending on how the game's going. But it was interesting to see him play a 490, just because I think that could, you know, you don't want to train a box-to-box player if you don't have to. And I think there was certain elements of, do we have to drain him? Would it be nice to see another substitution as well? Maybe Brooklyn Alunga come on, because when players get on the ball, the crowd get up for it and they really rise for it. And I think Bromley needed a bit of that. They needed a bit of a wake up just to get them over the line. But to be fair, they got over the line anyway. So maybe it's just conjecture at this point.
It's going to be interesting to see what he does on Tuesday. I would assume, for example, that Jude Arthurs plays on Tuesday, not because one of Charles or Hondemark shouldn't play, but just because Jude didn't come on the pitch. So to me, why would you not freshen up? Why would you not start with Jude? He's got a full 90 in his tank, having been an unused sub. It'll be very interesting to see if he starts with Whiteley and Pinnock. I assume he will, but maybe if he starts with them, there'll be an inclination to probably get them off by about the 60th minute, because it's got, as much as we spoke about that Tuesday prep thing, Newport are now riding the crest of a wave. Their form has picked up. On everyone who's playing Bromley, their form has picked up. So their form has picked up. Good 2-1 win at Barnet on the weekend. And I just think that you're answering a lot of Pinnock and Whiteley to go for a full 90. I know Whiteley came off on 78, but you're asking a lot for them to go on a full 90 in midweek. You're asking a lot from Kabamba to go a full 90. Again, knowing that it's not always going to be a good day for him. And by a good day, I mean, like, he got some of the cheek, treatment on Saturday, where sometimes it can feel like not a lost cause. I don't want to say that, but you know how, like, with cheek, sometimes it's, you're watching them and you're like, you're basically having to do a solo battering ram performance, just giving the head defenders headache for 90 minutes, and it might not go your way for 90, but we're asking you to just do it over and over and over again, right? I doubt very strongly that Andy would start Kabamba and Dananga together, but I'm glad, and this is where I come to you, Cole, after that lengthy monologue, I'm glad Dananga got on the pitch on Saturday, because we'd seen him, like, not come off the bench 3 games in a row, and he was like, no, come on, he's got to get some minutes. And he looked lively. I'm not saying that he looked like he was going to score anything, but dare I say, for 12 minutes, it looked like a player who has something to prove, or am I reading too much, Cole?
No, I felt the same. I thought the subs that he made, I would like to have seen them a bit earlier, because we're used to Andy making substitutes on 65 minutes. It's a thing that we all notice now. 65 is usually the point where he makes the changes. When it was ticking into 75 and, what was it, eventually 78, I was thinking, wow, he's leaving, it's really late. But when they came on, they worked, right? Like, Demola drew the yellow card. They were down to 10 men. He worried them every time he got the ball. 100%. But Dananga, yeah, he looked like he was lively. And I'm expecting him to get at least, what you think, 20, 25 minutes. If we play with one up, which we probably will at Newport, you've got to expect him to get 20, 25 minutes. You'd hope Brooklyn gets the same. You hope Demola gets another go, you know, off the bench as well. we've got some real attacking options that can worry people when they come on. I thought Marcus looked like he was out there to say, you know, I'm still part of this club. I can still make a contribution.
Mm, most definitely. Pete, it's looking like we might not see Michael Cheek for a while, right? We might not even see him before the season is done. Where do I want to go with this? And obviously, Cheek has more than played his part this season. We can't, his goals, he's led the way again this season in terms of the goals charts. I want to say he's got 17 or is it 16? I can't remember off the top of my head. What are you worried that we're now down to two strikers? I'm trying to work out what my question was. That's my worry.
I mean, yes, in as much as Dananga, for all his strengths, he's not the kind of striker you just play up top on his own.
Mm.
He's a partnership kind of striker, or he's a play on the shoulder kind of striker. But he's not the sort of wide body who you put up up top on his own to hold the ball up and bring others into play. He's the one being played in, hopefully. With that would be my concern, is probably don't have that kind of player if Kabamba is either sidelined or if he's running out of steam. They haven't got a guy who can just come up and play up on his own. Bromley have brought Solcada back from his loan. I assume that's to have him as a backup option, not to send him back out again. It might be to send him back out again. I'm not sure entirely, but it would make sense to have him in the building as an option, just in case. But yeah, if something happens to Kabamba, then it's just Dananga. Where do you go with that? You know, you can't play then one up front.
Yeah, you have to almost change your style of play, you know.
Yeah, you've got to change it up. And you just don't know. You know, sometimes there's those sort of fairy tale stories where a player who's not played all season suddenly comes up trumps right at the end. Or someone who's just not featured that much suddenly pops up with a really important goal. Like in the FA Trophy semi-final. Two goals from
James Olabi.
James Olabi, but then the FA Trophy semi-final that took to Wembley. Who scored that?
Oh, you mean the playoff semi-final?
Playoff semi-final, yeah.
Miles Weston.
Yes. The playoffs. Yeah.
He hadn't had a big impact on the season. He was just sort of a squad player doing his bit here and there. Came in, played on the wrong wing, and scored two of the most important goals in the club's history. So, there's Marcus Dananga could still have a massive impact on Bromley's season, and you have to sort of he's not, you know, some kid that they're taking a chance on. He's a serious professional with a proper CV. So you just kind of got to have that picture in your head. If something happens to Kabamba, probably going to need to change their start all of a sudden.
I'm going to end the episode with this. I was going to focus on a particular player, but I think the next time we do a deep dive, I want to wait a few weeks before I bring this player up. So I'm going to leave that for the next episode. So I'll just end the episode by asking you this question. A few weeks ago, maybe even 2 months ago, who knows, whenever we recorded one of the deep dives, I asked you, who was our player of the half season? And if I'm not mistaken, the names that came up were Idris, Ashley Charles. I'm missing someone. Who was the other one? Pinnock. I'm now asking you that question again because we're getting close to the end of the season and player of the season votes. I'm not convinced by what I said. I'm not convinced by what I said now. And I want to throw a name in. I'm going to throw two names in that possibly have to enter player of the season conversation who we didn't say the last time. Omar Shomi and Grant Smith.
Yeah.
Are they in the conversation? Yeah.
They're exactly the two names I just wrote down.
Do you remember we said that no one's mentioned Grant Smith? And then we said, actually, you know what? The second half of the season, it might just be that he makes a very telling contribution and he does come into the picture. I think he's in the picture now. And Omar has, since he's become the center of the central of the center of defense, right? Not playing on the left or the right. I am the guy now. I play in the middle, and it's the other guys play to the left and the right of me. Since he's been that guy, I think he's been unbelievable. So good. So yeah, and he's got to be, and that's and it's another player that there is a goal in there.
Yeah,
you know, and that you know, those a header from a corner coming up in these next nine games could make all the difference, you know.
So Grant Smith, before you come in, Pete, Grant Smith has 12 clean sheets this season.
Yeah.
He's fourth in the goalkeeper clean sheets chart. But I think the reason why I'm saying Grant is because, and obviously I know he had that blip early in the season when Sam Long came in for him, but we take Grant Smith's consistency for granted. For that, no pun intended, but we take it for granted. And I was just thinking at yesterday's game, this guy just gets the job done with little to no. I know he won player of, I think he won player of the season. Was it in the promotion year? I think he won player of the season. Yeah. But he just gets the job done with little to no fanfare. And I just wonder if he's gone under the radar this year for people in terms of his contribution. But Pete, with your keeper's eye on.
Goalkeepers are like referees. You notice when they have a bad game and you don't notice when they have a good game. Because, you know, or if, you know, they just do the job well. You won't notice them. And that's the problem with Grant Smith is he's so consistent and so consistently just doing the simple things well, doing the difficult things and making them look simple. And so it's easy for a player like that to go under the radar and so valuable, you know, almost, I think pretty much any manager in the league would take Grant Smith in a blink of an eye. You know, obviously they've got their goalkeepers and there's some really good goalkeepers out in League Two. But I think any of them would take it. If they needed a goalkeeper and he was available, they would just shut up shop and say that, you know, done. Omar, what can you say? I mean, if you believe the transfer rumours, you know, people were looking at him and as a serious player for next season, and no one quite realizes how fast he is, I don't think.
Yeah.
He is rapid. I watched him doing a warm down once, and his pace, I mean, yeah, his legs are like 17 feet long, but his pace was incredible. And it's not just that, you know, there are better footballing centre backs, but it does, you know, the aerial stuff so well. He does the recovery work so well, positions well. What more could you want from a centre back, really? And that will mystify some of the previous clubs he's been at. He's been made a scapegoat.
Yeah,
Sutton, Colchester. You know, they're all looking at him now, going, "What? You know, is this the same guy who was with us?" You know,
and remember, some Bromley fans didn't even want him back.
No, crazy.
So let's not forget that as well. Yeah.
And the other player who features in my, you know, idea is Hondemark. Just again, consistency. When he's in the team, he brings something, and his work rate and his goal threat. What, you know, that's exactly what he was brought in for. And you know, he was in League One last season, and it didn't quite work out for him. You know, maybe it was a jump too soon. But I would have no qualms with, you know, if Bromley go up, if he's a big player in the team next season, I don't think that would be a bad thing at all, because he's got such a good engine, and he's a player as well. He can really play. So, you know, that trio for me is the conversation now. Pinnock's dropped off a bit. Still, what a quality player, and what a luxury to have such a good player. But those three are the ones that are featuring in my thinking.
So, interestingly enough, I'm just checking my numbers. Hondemark. So the top four in the Bromley squad for goal contributions, which is obviously like a modern day stat. Cheek, and this is just league, we're not counting cup. Cheek has 19 goal contributions, 16 goals and 3 assists. Kabamba has 12, 11 goals and 1 assist. Ben Thompson has 9, 7 goals and 2 assists. And then in fourth place is Will Hondemark with 4 goals and 3 assists, right? And I think that's gone under the radar and goes back to, Pete, the point that Andy made, that Hondemark is more of a goal threat, or certainly more of a goal contribution threat. And what I like with Andy, I didn't realise, by the way, that Will had a strong Irish accent. It's only when I heard it yesterday that I was like, oh! I was like, this is the first time I'd heard him talk. He actually played for Republic of Ireland under 21s. I'll have to ask him ask him about that next time I see him. But what was I saying? What I've liked with what Andy's done is I think on the whole that Andy has picked the games well for when Jude should start and when Will should start. Obviously, Ashley Charles just starts because he's a different kind of midfielder to those other two. But I think Andy should be applauded for working out who is better for which game and recognizing when it hasn't worked and just switching them around immediately at half time and going, nah, this ain't your game today. I need to bring the other one on. So if we're looking at, let's just fantasize for a minute and say Bromley get promoted, you have to retain all three of those midfielders. If there's any kind of out of contract situation with any of them, they have to be retained for next season. You might have to upgrade because it's a higher league, but you keep your identity with those three in your team.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, then the nucleus. And also, it's amazing as well. We're talking about Bromley's injury record. And maybe that's reflects on the coaches and the recovery, the staff who are helping them recover from games, you know. But Bromley haven't had a lot of, you know, niggly kind of injuries this season. It's the guys are turning up and putting in, I mean, the kind of yards those central midfielders are putting in, astronomical. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's beyond what most humans could possibly conceive of. And yet they're coming back game after game, Tuesday night, Saturday night. They're doing it. They're putting in the yards. But it's because they're being rotated, Ashley Charles aside, they're being rotated and they're given a chance to rest. And, you know, the right game for the right player, horses for courses. Mm. It's incredible that Bromley haven't had more injury issues. I mean, Michael Cheek aside now, and you know, there haven't been any real big ones apart from Jenkinson and the other centre back,
Cameron.
He's been out for a while. But other than that, it's they've had a pretty clean run of things. So touch wood, that continues, and you know, props to the staff for keeping them fit as well.
So, gents, we'll call it there. Obviously, Newport on Tuesday, Colchester next Saturday. I'm going to lie as ever and say that we will return next Sunday after the Colchester game for another episode. As things stand, people, that is the plan for us to record on Sunday after that Colchester game. But if I'm wrong and I'm lying, we will definitely be recording after the Barnet game, which will be another 4 games later, and by then we'll probably have a very clear idea of where this season is going. But as ever, people, listen, in the links below, in the descriptor below, you can find Pete, you can find Cole. I've put where you can find them socially, on social media, etc. That's been another episode of the Deep Dive. Again, you don't just have to watch this via YouTube. Thanks to everybody who watched the last episode on YouTube. That one had loads of views. I don't know suddenly how or why. But when I say loads, as in much more than previous ones, and the previous ones are fine as well. But big up to everyone who clocked in for that. And also, you can now listen to this through the website as a audio feed. I think it's free on there. I can't actually remember. Must be. Anyways, so thank you everyone for listening to the Deep Dive. We will be back very, very soon. 9 games to go. Bromley still lead league to 73 points. Let's see where this journey is going to end. I've been Mash, Cole's been Cole, Pete's been Pete. We'll see you all very, very soon. Everywhere we go.